Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the church today. New archaeological findings in the city of David is the topic of today's show with your host, Pastor John Ehlers.
We're very excited to welcome to Lutheran Radio this morning Anarina Heyman. Anarina is the director of Jerusalem Watch, and we're very pleased to have you with you. Welcome, Anarina.
Thank you, John.
Now, you're the director of Jerusalem Watch. Can you tell us what that is?
John, I work at the City of David, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. But when people start understanding what the City of David is, they get very excited and they want to be part of what is happening in the City of David. And when we saw that they want to give participation, we decided to build a platform in which people can engage. So the Jerusalem Watch is basically now, we officially launched on Jerusalem Day. It is the day when Jerusalem got reunited, and it's being, we've been celebrating it ever since. And on that day, we started the Jerusalem Watch, and people from all over the world, there's millions of people around the world that feel a deep personal and spiritual connection to Jerusalem, and they are seeking a meaningful way to express their devotion and commitment. And in recent times, we've been seeing through excavations what's happening in the ancient Jerusalem, and through that, we've then created this platform in which people can literally become a tangible part of prophecy fulfillment.
Now, you mentioned the city Jerusalem, and we were talking a little bit before we started our interview about the meaning of the name Jerusalem. Can you explain that for our listeners?
The name Jerusalem is very, very important. The first time when we start to read about the origins of Jerusalem is in Genesis. The first time when we hear about the city is when Abram is meeting with Melchizedek, and he meets this king of Salem. That's the word that we hear. And in Hebrew, it is Shalem. So we can already hear the last bit of Jerusalem there. When we fast forward one chapter forward, we see where Abram is promised a son. Isaac is growing up, and then God asks Abram to offer his only son, his beloved son, Isaac. And he goes from Beersheba, and on the second, third day, he sees this place in the background, and he knows that this is the place. And we're speaking about Mount Moriah, the place where the binding of Isaac took place. That is Temple Mount, basically, today. And we know that Isaac is not offered. God gives a ram in his place. And then Abram goes and he calls this place something. He calls it Hashem God Yireh. God will see, God will make manifest. But now we have the Yireh and we have the Shalem. And we also know, let's just see what happened when Abram was meeting with Melchizedek. A very interesting thing happened. It's the first time that we hear about drinking wine together and breaking bread together. And we also know that it's the first time when a tithe is being given to Shalem, or the future Jerusalem. So all of this happens in the time of Abram. But where do we hear for the first time the word Jerusalem? Where do we put these things together? We hear it when David comes to the fore. After 300 years of the conquest of Israel from Joshua's time through the time of the judges, we know that the time of the judges was a very volatile time. It ends, the last chapter ends out being really, really, it's a sad, sad chapter. And we see that the tribes really are looking for somebody to unite them. They choose Saul. It was not God's choice. God said you had to wait just a little bit more. And at the end, we know that David comes to the fore. And after 7.5 reign in Hebron, he's then asked by all the tribal leaders to come and rule the tribal confederation of Israel as in unity. And that's when David says, I will go to Jerusalem. I will do it from there. It was one of the last cities taken in this conquest, and he conquers it from the Jebusites when we read it in the Bible. But then he calls it Jerusalem. Now, it's very interesting that 644 times in the Bible, we hear the word Yerushalem. Only 5 times we hear Yerushalayim. Now, if we can put it a name together, as we said, Yerushalayim, it basically means that God will make peace manifest. It will be the place from where peace will be manifested. And we can maybe, if we have time, go into the word shalom, because that is very, very important. If people read the Psalms, it says, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. So let's get into that. I just want to wrap up the name of Jerusalem, because we said there is a Yerushalayim and a Yerushalayim. Only five times we read the Yerushalayim. If we look at the Hebrew, it's one little letter. The Yud, the smallest letter in the Hebrew alphabet that is put between the Lamed and the Mem. And that makes a huge, huge difference, because it brings Jerusalem into plural. It means that there are two Jerusalems. And according to Jewish tradition, and I believe also to Christian tradition, there is a Jerusalem in heaven. So there are two Jerusalems. And what it basically says also, God said that the Jerusalem in heaven is ready, it's waiting, it is sparkling. But he said, I will not enter the heavenly Jerusalem if I cannot enter the earthly Jerusalem. And if you come to the city of David, and this is what we're going to talk about today, things that are very, very exciting what's happening there, you can see that this earthly Jerusalem is literally waking up exactly like the prophet Isaiah said and as God has promised. And that is the nucleus that is written in the name of Jerusalem. John, can I explain the word shalom? Would that be okay?
By all means, please tell us, what does that shalom mean and point to?
Okay, so in general, if you hear the word shalom, how do you translate that?
Most of the time we would say peace.
Exactly. So if I greet you, I actually greet you with a greeting of peace. But that's a very, very shallow meaning of the word shalom. If you go into the Hebrew, it actually means wholeness, to be completely whole and well on the deepest part of your soul. So if I greet you with shalom, I mean for you to become completely what God made you to be. And for that, I also wish then for Jerusalem. If I pray for the peace of Jerusalem, I pray for Jerusalem to be completely whole, the way that God has created her to be, and she will become again as a praise to the earth in the end of days. And this is why, if I say pray for the peace of Jerusalem, I'm asking for her to become whole. And maybe we can go into what the city of David is then happening right now, what we see so excitingly happening in front of our eyes.
Indeed, let's go there. Where is the city of David, and what's going on there?
Now, the city of David has been, for a very long time, the best-kept secret of our time. Many people, many pilgrims, when they come to Jerusalem, they end up at the Old City. They go to the Western Wall, because that is the place of the Temple Mount, the place where the temple stood. Most of the people just don't know that the origins of Jerusalem before the temple was built by Solomon, in the time of King David, the Jebusite city that David took, lies outside what is today known as the Old City. It lies on the southern hill, around about 200-300 yards or meters from what is today known as the Old City. And in a time span of 2,000 years, we're speaking about the destruction, correct, of Jerusalem. There was a 2,000-year gap, and nobody knew. Slowly, slowly, as wars and battles basically covered her, she completely disappeared. And people thought, in the time of Queen Victoria, 150 years ago, nobody knew where the city lay, because she was completely under 30 meters of debris. We're talking 10 time period of civilizations, and she just slowly, slowly disappeared. So one day, Queen Victoria woke up, and she wanted to know, what is happening in Jerusalem? The only reference that she had was the Old City. Now, the walls of the Old City, or the Old City as we know, is 450 years old. It was built by Solomon the Great. But if I read the Bible, I know that in the times of King David, that dates back 3,000 years. So that's a big gap. And so she sent Charles Warren. he wanted to go into Temple Mount because that's where everybody wants to go. Apparently there were a lot of treasures there. A lot of manuscripts spoke about these treasures of Temple Mount, and a lot of people came to do that. But that was during the Ottoman Empire. And the moment when he got there, the Ottoman city, and there's no way that you're going to get in. And that is one of the most beautiful stories, John, that we can learn from ancient Jerusalem. Many times you are well on your way thinking and knowing that God has directed you into one place, you're living for him, you're getting to that place where you believe he wanted you to be, and then suddenly he redirects you. And you think, but did I understand something incorrectly? Didn't I get it? And God says, no, I'm just now going to show you one of my hidden treasures. And that is what he did with Charles Warren. If Charles Warren didn't get redirected from Temple Mount, he would have never discovered the City of David. And the City of David, where do we get the name? It is the ancient Jerusalem. It says when David conquered the city, he called it the City of David. So in the Psalms, he speaks of it as Jerusalem. But when he conquered it, he called it the City of David.
So how did Charles Warren then stumble on the City of David?
So in that time, from the Mamluk era, the Gihon Spring was already known. Now, the Gihon Spring is the water source of Jerusalem in ancient times. And it's very interesting when you come to Jerusalem and to different places in the Middle East, you'll hear the word Tel Aviv, Tel Dan. And that is it's the way that ancient cities were built. Ancient cities is basically a tal, or a tel is a man-made hill. It meant one civilization after another built on top of the cities, and it became a man-made hill. The same basically happened with Jerusalem as well. And why did they choose to build a city upon a city upon a city? Because they had to be close to a water source. And this was the Gihon Spring. The first time that we hear Gihon in the Bible is in Genesis, because there were four rivers that surrounded the Garden of Eden. And it is said that the Gihon Spring, or the Gihon River of the Garden of Eden basically disappeared, but it still feeds the Gihon Spring. What does the Gihon mean? Gihon means to burst forth. The waters of the Gihon Spring is literally coming out in bursts. And that is the water that Isaiah speaks of when he says, you will draw water with joy from the springs of salvation. A very interesting context in which he spoke there. Maybe we can go into that. But why, you ask me, how did Charles Warren discover the City of David? He went to the Gihon Spring because that was already known. He went into the Gihon Spring, into Hezekiah's tunnel that was also known by that time. And he went 20 meters in and he saw a natural fissure within the tunnel leading up. And he said, that is where I'm going to go in. That is where I'm going to find this tunnel that's going to take me into Temple Mount. It took him 20 days to get wood from England so that he could build the scaffolding. And then he went up and he discovered an intricate tunnel system, which he then realized was the tunnels that basically defended the water source, because in the old days, if you want to take a city, you take its water, you cut it off, the people die. So that's why he knew that this was the way that the Canaanites, even before David, was protecting the water source of the Gihon Spring. And at that moment, Charles I realized that he has just rediscovered the City of David. It is the same fissure through which he went, through which we then believe Joab, or Joab, the commander of David's armies, actually took the city in the first place when David took it from the Jebusites. We do not read a lot about how David took the city. Can you remember anything in the Bible of how the city was taken?
David, as you say, Joab volunteers to go up, and it appears that he goes up through the water shaft, and David, you know, pronounces the curse on the city, and I think that's 2 Samuel 5, isn't it?
Yeah. What we do not know is that there's only a hint. What we read in the Bible is David says in Hebrew, he who touches the tinor, or the pipe. Now, the biblical Hebrew of this word is very difficult to explain. Today, in modern-day Hebrew, we use that word as a pipe. But even if you go into trying to understand it in ancient Hebrew, it's a difficult word to explain. And that's the only thing that David says. Why didn't he tell us more about how to take the city? Because if he wrote about that, the next king will come, he will read it in the annals of the king, and he will go, ah, so that's how we take the city, and he will come. So David kept it as a secret. He sort of gave it as a riddle when he wrote it about how to take the city. So he said, the man who touches the pipe and takes the city, he will become the commander of my armies. And that was Joab. Now, if you come to the city of David and you see this natural feature in the wall, you will understand that it is a very, very difficult feat to actually do, to actually conquer, to go up that pipe or to go up that feature. It took Charles Warren 20 days, and then he could build a scaffolding to do that. Joab was obviously an amazing man, a man of war, and he had to go through this feature. He had to run through the whole system out to the gates and open up the gates for the people to come. And the interesting thing, the amazing thing that we find every day is when we read the Bible, there's certain things that we don't know how it happened until we start with the excavations. And suddenly the excavations are putting the picture together. The other half also happens, the vice versa. Sometimes we see something in excavations and we have no idea what we're looking at. And always going back to the Bible or some of the Jewish sources or Josephus, one of the big historians, suddenly things come together and we know exactly what we're looking at. And this is the excitement that we feel every day in the city of David.
We can hear that excitement in your voice. Can you tell us about some of the finds that have been uncovered there in the city of David then? Because as I understand, some amazing things have been found.
Every day. Archaeology takes time. So slowly but surely we are discovering more. Only 20% of the city of David or the ancient biblical Jerusalem has been excavated, so we have a lot of work still to do. What are the things that we found? Obviously, one of the first things that from the beginning people could come and visit is Hezekiah's tunnel. Hezekiah's tunnel is the time when the Assyrian king Sennacherib came, and he was starting to take Israel from the north. That is the time when the 10 tribes got exiled. And he basically said to Hezekiah, I'm coming for you. I'm coming for Jerusalem. And in that time, Hezekiah said, okay, so what can I do? The water source, as it was protected in the times of David, was not enough anymore. And when we go to the Bible, he says, why should the kings of Assyria or the king of Assyria come and find a lot of water? So he decided to redirect the water through the city of David, underneath the city of David, to the Shiluach pool or the pool of Siloam. And that you can actually come and see. It's an amazing structure. We have no idea how they did it. 533 meters with a 30-centimeter incline. This was before the Romans came with their amazing building skills. We know in the times of Herod, the things that were built are amazing. The aqueducts that the Romans built. But this was long before that. So we are still scratching our heads trying to figure out how they did that. So that's the Hezekiah's tunnel. And that leads from the Gihon spring, redirects the water to the Siloam pool. Siloam pool, in Hebrew, Shiluach, that means sent, water is being sent. And I believe to our listeners, in the Christian narrative, the Siloam pool is a very, very important in the history of the New Testament as well. So that pool has been rediscovered as well. That was very, very exciting for us. We knew that the pool existed. We knew that it would be at the bottom of the city of David, but we didn't know where to look. And round about 9 years ago, again, a wonderful story that we learned from the ancient city, a drainage pipe burst. So sometimes something happens in your life where a lot of mess happens and you have no idea why this happened. But then when you start cleaning up your life and you start going deeper, you discovered the most amazing treasures. And this is what happened with us as well. When they started to clean up, they discovered the pool of Siloam. What happened is, wherever we are in the city of David, the Israeli Antiquities Authority is always there. So whenever something is being fixed or we have to go down in certain layers, they will always come and check what's going on. And at that stage, as they were cleaning up, Eli Shukran was always coming to check, one of the big archaeologists that has been excavating in the city of David. And one day he heard literally metal on stone. And he said, wait, that is not just normal debris. And they started to uncover one stone. They started to uncover another stone. And he said, I think we've just discovered the Pool of Siloam. And that is basically open for the people to come. John, you are welcome to come and visit, to come and see this amazing pool. It's history. It's history. And with a lot of things in Israel, when tourists come to visit, they will say, this is the probable place where this happened, or this is the probable place where this happened. You can basically count on your one hand the places that we are absolutely 100% sure this is where it happened. And the Siloam Pool is one of those places.
And I can concur with you. I have been there. It is indeed a wonderful place to go, and I would encourage all our listeners to do that and to see all the other finds in Israel and particularly Jerusalem. Can you tell us about some others?
Yes. So, interestingly enough, when we found Siloam Pool, at the same time, we've also found a drainage pipe that leads from the Siloam Pool all the way up to Temple Mount. And we knew that if this is a drainage pipe, it means that there must be some kind of road that is on top of this drainage pipe. That was the one thing. The second thing that we saw is while they were excavating this Siloam Pool, there was a very interesting pattern that emerged. It was steps, and then there's a little bit of a walkway, and then steps, and a little bit of a walkway. And the archaeologist said, but listen, this pattern that we see here is exactly what we see up at the Hulda gates when you enter Temple Mount. And he said, but it means if we see that pattern there and that this pattern here, these are connected. There must be one thing that connects the Siloam Pool with Temple Mount. And that's exactly what we found. We found a massive, massive road leading up from the Siloam Pool all the way up to Temple Mount. What does this mean? It means that the Siloam Pool was used for ritual bathing. Before you go up, and we call that word Aliyah. When the Jewish people return today to Israel, we call that Aliyah. It means to go up. But the origins of that word comes from going up to Jerusalem during the three pilgrim festivals. They made Aliyah, and that's why you will see Song of Ascents, Shir HaMa'alot. It means the song of going up. And these songs were sung when the pilgrims came to Jerusalem, and also when they walked this specific road. Now, that meant you went for your mikveh or your ritual bath, and then you would ascend this final ascent to Temple Mount. And very interestingly, again we can see the prophecies being fulfilled, because it says in Isaiah, build up the highway, remove the stones for my people to return. John, we are excavating this road right now. It is under a lot of debris. There are also houses on top. And because of that, we have to tunnel this road out, literally. And we hope within the next 4 or 5 years that the people will literally be able to come and ascend, like the pilgrims, do that final ascent to Temple Mount. It's an amazing road, and you are welcome again to come and see that on your next visit.
I would imagine that along that road, some other important things were found as well, right? Weren't they?
With all roads, modern roads, ancient roads, drainage pipes have the ability to gobble up things. Sometimes you lose a coin, sometimes you lose your keys, sometimes something just goes in and you know, well, there it goes, I'm not going to get that back. Hopefully not a piece of jewelry or a ring or something precious. And the same thing happened. Now, who traveled this road from Siloam Pool to the Temple Mount? Let's go back to the verse that we spoke about, the Gihon Spring, or the waters that Isaiah spoke about. He said he will draw water with joy from the springs of salvation. This refers specifically to the Sukkot festival, the Feast of Huts, or the Feast of Booths. The time when the people of Israel go into tents or into huts or booths for 1 week. Now, in that time, in the ancient times, there was a water drawing ceremony where the priest will come and he will draw the water from the Siloam pool, from the Gihon spring, and he will walk up with joy. They said, you have never seen joy if you've seen the water drawing ceremony and then the leading up to Temple Mount, where this water was then poured onto the altar along with the wine. Only in this week, there was a water libation. This water libation stands for God's unconditional love. Wine we make by ourselves. Wine we prepare. It's our life going into the preparation of wine. But the water, we cannot give that to ourselves. It stands for God's unconditional life, God's unconditional love. And therefore, it was a very, very joyful time. So we have priests walking up and down that whole ceremony, that whole week, walking up and down this road. So when we started to do the excavations within the tunnel, a few things came up. One of the things were a very small yellow ball. And one of the people thought that this is some kind of toy. One of the guy's kids might have been in his pocket. It fell out because it was yellow and thin, and it looked like something that you can just throw away. But you cannot leave the site without showing everything to the archaeologist. At that stage, it was Eli Shukran, and he was looking. They were doing this through the weight sifting, and he was looking at this thing, and he said, guys, there's only one metal that never loses its luster, even if it's 2,000 years under debris, and that is gold. He said, this is not plastic, this is gold. Why did we think it was plastic? Because it was so thinly plated that people thought that it looked like plastic. So then we discovered, okay, we're sitting with a golden ball, and at the top of this ball there was a little loop. So obviously you attached it to like a jewelry piece, maybe it was a pendant or something. But then he said, just remember that in those days the noblemen would put certain things on the hem of their garments. And he said, and also, if I can remember correctly, there was one person that had to have little things at the hem of his garment. And who would that be, John?
That's the high priest.
That's the high priest, when he had to go into the Yom Kippur service, into the Holy of Holies. He said, if this is something like that, it should not be a ball, it should be a bell. And he started to shake it, and it started to ring. And when we did x-rays, we saw the clapper inside. So suddenly we discovered the bell of the high priest. For we have an idea of what a bell should look like, correct? We know that a bell opens up at the bottom and it has a clapper. That is our idea of a bell. So we didn't even understood what we were looking at until it started to ring. Now, if we read the Bible, it says you will put pomegranates and bells. But the word in Hebrew says betucham, the same word that God says, I will dwell among you. And what we actually then understood is that he said you will put a bell within the pomegranate. So it was one unit, and it gave us so much understanding and knowledge on the way that they did things and how the garments were made in those days.
Thank you, Anarina, for that. Very, very interesting. Now, you mentioned that you're the head of Jerusalem Watch, and you like to help bring these excavations to life for people. Can you tell us how you do that and exactly a little bit more about what your organization does and how we can find out more about that organization?
Thank you, John. Most important for us is to connect people to what is happening according to the prophecy. The main prophecy that we can see happening in the city of David, the ancient biblical Jerusalem, is the verse in Isaiah 52, verse 2, that says, shake thyself from the dust, arise, and take your rightful place, O Jerusalem. What we see through the excavations is this ancient city finally, in the time, in the etratzon, in a time of favor, starting to shake off the dust. And people can help us through this organization. Our website is jerusalem-watch.com. I'm saying that again, www www.jerusalem-watch.com. And they can go and they can buy. Specifically, we have a coin for around about 100 shekels. I think it would be 20 pounds or something like that. And through that, if you buy that coin, you support these excavations. You help us to uncover her glorious past, but also prophetically accompanying her to her beautiful future that she's been promised. And that's also what God says when he calls up the watchman. He says, on your walls, O Jerusalem, I have appointed watchmen. And the job of a watchman is to remind the Lord day and night that he should bring Jerusalem to become a praise to the earth. And this is what this platform and this project is for you to become a tangible part of that prophecy. So through buying the coin or any of our products, you basically support the excavations at the City of David. The other thing that people can do is we have a watchman kit. In that kit, everything that we spoke about today and even more is in a little booklet with films and many other tools through which you can educate yourself and others on what's happening literally right now in the ancient biblical Jerusalem.
Anarina Heyman, Director of Jerusalem Watch, thank you so much for helping us understand the history of Jerusalem, the history of the City of David, and how God is still even bringing that history to life even today through the excavations and the work that's going on there. May God bless you in your work. And indeed, we encourage our listeners to go to visit Jerusalem and Israel and perhaps might even meet you there. So God bless you on your work and thank you for your time.
John, thank you so much. From the heart of Zion, from the heart of Jerusalem, we bless your listeners. May they be blessed in their endeavors. May they be blessed in their understanding and their knowledge of God. Thank you so much for having us today.
Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.